The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President sent out another tweet with words that I cannot repeat. As decency takes another hit, please let's not get used to it. 'Cause this isn't normal, oh no siree. This isn't normal, nor should it be. Just like that frog in boiling water who doesn't feel it getting hotter before it's way too warm. No, this isn't normal. Cabinet members sponge and grift while everybody else gets stiffed. Each one trying to make undone the department they're supposed to run. This isn't right, folks, and we can't wait. We gotta fight, folks, before it's too late. Like the laundry suds that flood emergent when the Brady kids put in too much detergent. Trouble's gonna swarm, 'cause this isn't normal.
No, it's not.
Porn star payoffs telling lies don't even make us bat our eyes. In this new swampy neighborhood, Trump's making W look pretty good. This isn't standard, this isn't couth. These jerks have slandered and shredded the truth. Like an all-you-can-eat buffet seems great till you realize what you just ate and feel the coming storm will prove this isn't normal. With each new outrage we just see enabling by the GOP, attacking media, comedians, the FBI, it's time to tell those schmoes goodbye. It's not defensible, ignoring facts.
Nope.
They're reprehensible, so give them the axe. Since to do their jobs these slobs refuse, let's make them sing those midterm blues. A blue wave's gonna form,
please,
to prove this isn't normal. Like that frog in the boiling water, let's make their elections hotter till they don't have a quorum. It rhymes, 'cause it isn't normal. No, it isn't normal. This isn't normal.
Lauren Mayer, she does some funny stuff, always topical and timely and spot on. No, this isn't normal. We talked about it yesterday with Laffy. It's the norm. We have a president who is certifiably insane, who does not understand the role of the presidency and the, you know, the needs of the office, the way that you comport yourself when you're president of the United States. He's turned it all upside down. And how people didn't understand that he was going to do that, I don't get. And why they're okay with it is just completely perplexing, utterly perplexing. So Trump is now in Long Island, New York, speaking again about MS-13, as if there are immigrant gangs who are branded in another country as MS-13 coming into the U.S. MS-13 formed in Los Angeles, if I'm not incorrect. And I could be wrong. I'm not one of those people who thinks I'm always right. Look, I'm just a regular person like you who's concerned about the ways of the world and happens to have a microphone. It's been doing this for a long time, so I can comment on what's going on. But, you know, I get frustrated because there's so much out there and I can't possibly get a good grasp of all of it. So I do my best to bring you what I can. That's why with What's News, I say this is a bit of What's News for now, because there's always so much going on and there's no way I can completely cover it. For instance, so Trump left for New York. And, you know, for a guy who hasn't held an actual press conference in over a year, he's held one press conference since he's been president. He does these little pool spray things. Some of what he said yesterday in the pool spray is included in today's What's News. But just about an hour or so ago, as he was leaving the White House to get on Marine One, to go to Air Force One, to go out to New York, he again took shouted questions from the reporters who are gathered on the lawn as he makes his way across the lawn to the helicopter, shouting out questions over the din of the helicopter running. Not a real good way to deal with the press. But then again, as we've learned, he doesn't deal well with the press. Let me see if I can't find this from yesterday. Yesterday we had the whole thing with Leslie Stahl, if I can find it. Is it down here? Sorry, this is, you know, if I had a producer, this is what the producer would be. I can't find it. There was that statement that he told Leslie Stahl in a semi-private meeting that, you know, he... No, I don't have it in here. He degrades the media so often, just as a way to, so that when, and I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, there's legitimate reporting, his minions, his followers will, you know, believe him in his demeaning of the press. Well, here's one question that was thrown out to him at today's gaggle as he was making his way towards the helicopter.
Well, they're going to...
The question was, why won't you say whether or not you have confidence in Rod Rosenstein? Okay, that was the question.
All be in the room tomorrow. We're
going to
see
all
what
be in the room tomorrow.
What I want is I want total transparency. Wait, you have to have transparency.
Really?
Even they probably want transparency because this issue...
They, meaning the Democrats.
This supersedes Republicans and Democrats. So what I want... From Rod, from the FBI, from everybody.
Yeah.
We want transparency. And you know what? I think in their own way, they are obstructionists, but even the Democrats, I really believe, on this issue, it supersedes. I think they want transparency, too.
Yeah, they want transparency, too, but they're not invited to the meeting. You won't let them in. And I don't have this audio. I looked for it. I couldn't find it. You had Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, well, they never asked. Why should they just expect that they'll be invited to something that doesn't concern them? It does concern them. You want transparency, then be transparent, you fucking asshole. Sorry, there. That's why we put the warning at the beginning of the show. Well, there's the Leslie Stahl. I can't get it from that. Oh, maybe I can play it from here. Let's see, Leslie Stahl clip. Can I play it from here? Let's see if this will work. I don't know if this will work or not. No. Oh, well. Doesn't really matter. It's, you know, here, is it here? I love it when the chat room... The chat room plays producer. Okay, so here's the Leslie Stahl quote. Let me see if it'll play from here.
Deal with it.
Before the interview, I met with him in Trump Tower. And he really is the same off camera that he is on camera, exactly the same.
Ah, it doesn't want to play.
And at one point, he started to attack.
Okay, it's going to keep stuttering like that. He said, you know why I do it? Talking about okay, here, Judy Stahl and Judy Woodruff and Leslie Stahl were discussing the attacks on reporters and news organizations when Stahl, unprompted, revealed Trump's comments to her and her boss just before the president-elect's interviews. There were no cameras. There was nothing going on, Stahl said, when she began to ask Trump about his attacks on reporters. Quote, and I said, you know, this is getting tired. Why are you doing this? You're doing it over and over, and it's boring, and it's time to end that. You won the nomination. And he said, this is all a direct quote, you know why I do it? I do it to discredit you all and demean you all so that when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you. He said that. This is the gaslighting of America. And not only is he doing it, all of his cronies are doing it too. It is ugly, but it's the reality we face right now. And we've got another 2.5 years of this or more. If America doesn't come around and get rid of this guy, it's just stunning. All right. Today we're going to head across the pond and talk to our friend Dennis Campbell of UK Progressive. I always love checking in with people in other countries to hear how they're dealing with Trump over there. Because, you know, the United States always used to be the reliable power of the free world. That this was the country that people looked up to. I used to have a guy. I need to send him an email. My pal Robert from the Netherlands, and he supported this show for a long time. I mean, really supported this show financially for a long time. And one day I asked him why I appreciated it, but why he was being so generous. And he said, "We need your voice." He said the United States was always this country that the rest of the world looked up to. And now of late, you know, it's disintegrating. Now, this was before Trump. I can't even imagine. I need to reach out to Robert in the Netherlands and make sure he's okay, because I haven't heard from him in a while. He may just be so disgusted with the United States, and things over there are descending into madness as well. Oh, well. All right. I'm going to try to, before we get our pal Dennis Campbell on the line, give you a roundup of today's news. We'll do it live because there's been a lot of new news since I recorded the recorded version at 7 this morning. So with no further ado,
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, breaking news this Wednesday afternoon, NFL owners agree to a new national anthem policy. Teams will be fined if players kneel on the field or the sidelines, though they will be allowed to stay in the locker room if they choose. Judging from the backlash on Twitter, I say stay tuned. There's the story is not going to just end like that. More to come. On his way to Marine One, as he headed to New York for a fundraiser today and to do this MS-13 thing out on Long Island, Trump answered some shouted questions. And, of course, he continues to lie.
No. We're not undercutting. We're cleaning everything up. This was a terrible situation. What we're doing is we're cleaning everything up. It's so important. What I'm doing is a service to this country. And I did a great service to this country by firing James Comey. And, excuse me, a lot of people have said it. And you go into the FBI, those great people working in the FBI, they will tell you, I did a great service to our country by firing James Comey.
Oh, help me. A lot of people will tell you that. Yeah, a lot of people will say the exact opposite, too. A federal district court judge today ruled that President Trump cannot block people from viewing his Twitter feed over their political views. Judge Naomi Rice Buchholz of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York said Trump's Twitter account is a public forum, and blocking people who reply to his tweets with differing opinions constitutes viewpoint discrimination, which violates the First Amendment. So all those people who sued him for blocking them won. Now, of course, the DOJ issued a statement on the ruling saying, quote, we respectfully disagree with the court's decision and are considering our next steps. Seriously? They're gonna appeal this. They're gonna fight this rather than just unblocking all the people that Trump has blocked. God help us. I say God help us. I don't even believe in God. Donald Trump admitted yesterday that his planned summit next month in Singapore with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un might not go ahead after Pyongyang seemed to back off in recent weeks on giving up the country's nuclear weapons. Listen carefully in this statement, as I think three times he says it may not happen and twice he says it may happen. And he repeats himself over and over again.
Conditions for a meeting with Kim Jong-un?
Well, I'd rather not say, but we are working on something. And, you know, there's a chance that it'll work out. There's a chance, there's a very substantial chance that it won't work out. I don't want to waste a lot of time, and I'm sure he doesn't want to waste a lot of time. So there's a very substantial chance that it won't work out, and that's okay. That doesn't mean it won't work out over a period of time, but it may not work out for June 12th. But there's a good chance that we'll have the meeting.
It may work out, but it may not work out. But it may work out for a future time, but it may work out for June 12th, or it may not work out, just in case you were wondering. Trump opened the door to a phased dismantling of North Korea's nuclear arsenal, backing away from his demand that Pyongyang abandon it completely. As usual, Trump rambled when speaking with the press after his meeting with South Korean President Moon yesterday.
Just an update, sir, just on where things stand with the summit. President Moon's national security advisor on the way here seemed to think that things are on track and that this will indeed happen.
Well, we're moving along, and we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
There are certain conditions that we want, and I think we'll get those conditions. And if we don't, we don't have the meeting. And frankly, it has a chance to be a great, great meeting for North Korea and a great meeting for the world.
And we'll see what happens.
If it doesn't happen, maybe it'll happen later. Maybe it'll happen at a different time. But we will see.
We are talking.
The meeting scheduled, as you know, on June 12th in Singapore.
May not happen.
And whether or not it happens, you'll be knowing pretty soon. But we're talking right now.
You have an idea of how denuclearization would take place? Would it be?
I do. I have a very strong idea how it takes place. And it must take place. That's what we're talking about. It must take place. But I have a very strong idea, and I have very strong opinions on the subject. I also have very strong opinions that North Korea has a chance to be a great country. And it can't be a great country under the circumstances that they're living right now. But North Korea has a chance, really, to be a great country. And I think they should seize the opportunity. And we'll soon find out whether or not they want to do that.
Oh, my God. To quote Rex Tillerson, what a fucking moron. He really is. Trump spoke at an anti-abortion event yesterday and showed where his priorities really lie. This is a quick clip. But you got to hear, he's such a fucking narcissist. It's just unbelievable.
But if Democrats gain power, they will try to reverse these incredible gains. These are historic gains. They will try and reverse many of them. So your vote in 2018 is every bit as important as your vote in 2016. Although I'm not sure I really believe that, but, you know.
Oh, my God.
I don't know who the hell wrote that line. I'm not sure.
It's all about him.
But
just
it's still
all
important,
about him.
Remember.
So, yeah. Yeah, don't worry. It's more important to vote for me than any of these. Midterm. It was more important last year. My God. Yesterday was big primary day in the 2018 elections. Stacey Abrams became the first black woman in the U.S. to be a major party nominee for governor. She won the state's Democratic primary yesterday.
In Georgia, Stacey Abrams easily defeated her opponent in the Democratic gubernatorial primary. She becomes the state's first female nominee for governor. And if she were to win in November, she'd be the country's first black female governor. In the meantime, the Republican governor's race in Georgia is headed for a runoff. In July, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle will face Secretary of State Brian Kemp.
There were other great progressive victories. I'm sure we'll talk about this on Thursday with Howie Klein tomorrow. Here's some other news. Democrat Lupe Valdez made history in Texas by becoming the first Latina nominated to run for the state's governorship. In other primary news, fighter pilot Amy McGrath is the latest political newcomer to triumph in a Democratic primary, winning Kentucky's swing 6th congressional district on Tuesday. Unfortunately, the DCCC got their way as establishment candidate Lizzie Fletcher also won, beating progressive activist Laura Moser, who they actively campaigned against in a Texas district, Democrats hope to flip. Gina Ortiz Jones won the Democratic nomination for a Texas U.S. House seat and could become the first lesbian, first Iraq war veteran, and first Filipina American to represent Texas in Congress. Only Republican lawmakers, I mentioned this before, not Democrats, will be invited to Thursday's meeting to review classified information relating to Trump's suggestion the FBI might have used an informant to gather information on his 2016 election campaign. And no, it's not called Spygate.
The Congress would like to see documents opened up. A lot of people are saying they had spies in my campaign. If they had spies in my campaign, that would be a disgrace to this country. That would be one of the biggest insults that anyone's ever seen, and it would be very illegal, aside from everything else. It would make probably every political event ever look like small potatoes. So we want to make sure that there weren't. I hope there weren't, frankly. But some man got paid based on what I read in the newspapers and on what you reported. Some person got paid a lot of money. That's not a normal situation, the kind of money you're talking about. So hopefully that would be, and I think the Department of Justice wants to get down to it, and I can tell you Congress does.
President Trump venting his frustration about reports of an FBI informant talking with members of his campaign in 2016. Tomorrow will be the meeting between members of the DOJ and Congress to review the highly classified documents related to contact between an FBI source and the Trump campaign. Republican Congressman Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy will meet with FBI Director Chris Wray, National Intelligence Director Dan Coats, and a DOJ National Security official named Ed O'Callaghan. No Democrats
no
were invited
Democrats.
To the meeting. That's
None.
Another break in the traditionally bipartisan field of intelligence oversight. The White House says there was no reason to make the meeting bipartisan.
The Democrats have said that they think it's inappropriate to have a meeting set up with just Republicans in the Justice Department. Is the White House, would the White House welcome Democrats to be at that meeting?
My understanding is they haven't been the ones requesting this information. I would refer you back to them on why they would consider themselves randomly invited to see something they've never asked to.
There you go. That's
evening,
the clip I was looking for.
15 hours before the participants were announced, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer issued a statement saying, if such a meeting occurs, it must be bipartisan in order to serve as a check on the disturbing tendency of the president's allies to distort facts and undermine the investigation and the people conducting it. So Senator Schumer clearly asked to be involved in this meeting.
Now, you notice that the Senate is not involved. It's the House Republicans who are going, Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy. But Adam Schiff, his Devin Nunes counterpart, was not invited, as he should have been. Yeah, but Trump wants transparency. My ass. The besieged EPA, have you heard about this? They had a meeting yesterday on water contaminants at the agency's headquarters in Washington, and they barred members of the press from attending. One journalist from the Associated Press was even grabbed and shoved by a security guard. At the White House press briefing yesterday, Sarah Sanders dodged a question about the incident.
So I wanted to get your comment on this incident that happened at the EPA earlier today. They were having a national summit on water contaminants. At least two reporters were barred from going into the event, and one was forcibly removed. I wondered if you had a comment. Do you approve of how that was handled, and will anyone be speaking to the press office over there about it?
Certainly we'll look into the matter. I've seen the reports. I know EPA has put out a statement. At this point, I'd refer you to them as we look into the incident. I don't have a lot of visibility since certainly we weren't there and we're in other meetings here, but something we are certainly going to look into. But at this point, I'd refer you to the statement the EPA put out.
Of course.
I can't speak to a situation that I don't have a lot of visibility into, but I would refer you back to their statement. Stephen?
To follow up on Anita and then a question as well to you, is there any situation barring a security incident in which you feel the White House feels it is appropriate to physically touch or physically handle a
report? I'm not going to weigh into random hypotheticals that may or may not exist. I don't know any information about this specific incident. You're asking me to speak to a blanket possibilities, which I'm not going to do, nor would I ever ask or expect you to do. John?
My other question was actually on the
DOJ. Sorry, I'm going to do one question at a time today.
She should be called the evader in chief. I swear. For second day today, reporters are again barred from an EPA event on toxic chemicals in drinking water, just in case you were wondering. The House voted late yesterday to pass a bill that will change significant aspects of Dodd-Frank, the banking reform bill introduced after loose lending and risky maneuvers by financial institutions led to the country's worst recession since the Great Depression. Since it passed in 2010, the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act has been the target of animosity by many conservatives and the banking industry. Given Donald Trump's animosity toward Dodd-Frank, it seems likely the bill will become law, having already passed in the Senate in March. Those in favor say changes will enable smaller banks to lend and compete more easily. Others call the move a giveaway. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen drew criticism from Democrats yesterday when she said she was unaware of the intelligence community's finding that Russia had interfered in the 2016 presidential election in support of Donald Trump.
To that point, do you have any reason to doubt the January 2017 intelligence community assessment that said it was Vladimir Putin who tried to meddle in this election to help President Trump win?
I do not believe that I've seen that conclusion.
Unbelievable.
That the specific intent was to help President Trump win, I'm not aware of that. But I do generally have no reason to doubt any intelligence assessment. I think what they're trying to do, in my opinion, and I defer to the intel community, is just disrupt our belief and our own understanding of what's happening, right? It's an integrity issue of who is saying what and why and how that may or may not affect an American's behavior and what they believe.
But that assessment did say that Putin orchestrated a cyber campaign with the intention of helping Donald Trump.
Do you have
any disagreement with that?
I do believe that Russia did and will continue to try to manipulate Americans' perspective on a whole variety of issues.
Yeah, but she never saw the intelligence community's report that was published in January of last year that said they were doing it implicitly to help Donald Trump. Ay, we are so screwed. We are so screwed. That's a little bit of what's news for now. We'll take a quick break. We'll check in with Jim Hightower and come back on the other side with Dennis Campbell of UK Progressive. We'll take a trip across the pond where much of us would rather be these days.
The Koch brothers want corporations to become the government. They even have a name for their extremist plutocratic plan, Pompeo. I'll tell you what that means today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. The Koch brothers' extremist political agenda of empowering multinational corporations to reign as sovereigns over the majority will of the people has always been inextricably entwined with the profiteering agenda of their wholly owned $100 billion a year industrial conglomerate. The brothers' plutocratic view of business as government even has a name, Pompeo, as in Mike Pompeo, the Trump regime's latest Secretary of State. Years ago, while living in the billionaire brothers' hometown of Wichita, Kansas, Mike got lucky when they pumped a load of Koch capital into a business he had started, turning him into a millionaire. Then, they partnered with him in another business that essentially made him a Koch industry subsidiary. In 2010, they turned this business asset they'd created into a political asset, providing the money from Koch PAC and the backing of their right-wing front group to elect Pompeo to serve as the congressman from Koch. The brothers even installed a Koch Industries lobbyist to run his congressional office. So Mike's been a loyal Kochhead, conferring with them and backing bills to advance their corporate and political fortunes. Their investment in Mike became a bonanza last year when he became Trump's yes man as the head of the CIA. And now they've hit the political jackpot, with Pompeo becoming head of the State Department. On everything from international oil deals that profit multinational giants like Koch Industries, to supporting the brothers' relentless opposition to all global efforts that would restrict fossil fuel profiteers from causing more climate change. The Koch's personal political insider is now their global corporate asset. This is Jim Hightower saying, to keep up with how Mike converts Koch-headed corporatism into U.S. foreign policy, go to www.prwatch.org/topics/Koch-exposed.
If you like these feisty pops of populism that Hightower zings out on the airwaves, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter provides the in-depth lowdown on what the greed heads of Wall Street and the bone heads of Washington are doing to us behind the scenes. With Hightower's saucy Texas humor and truth-telling populist perspective, the Lowdown literally can lift you up. And get this, you can have the Lowdown delivered to your mailbox or email each month for only $15 a year. Yes, 12 issues, only 15 bucks. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right. I'm back. I don't know if our guest is here or not. Dennis Campbell, are you with us? And he is not. Oh, no. All right. Well, we're scheduled to speak with Dennis Campbell of UK Progressive here now. And I don't know where he is. So let's try calling him one more time. Let's do this and see if it works. La 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 la, and there
hey
he
there,
is.
Nicole. How are
Hello.
You?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dennis?
I'm so sorry.
No problem. It's live radio without a producer, and these things happen every now and again. Dennis Campbell is the editor of UK Progressive Magazine at ukprogressive.co.uk. You can follow him on Twitter at UK Progressive. He's also co-host of the Three Muckrakers podcast. And he's, you know, he's an American who got smart and left this forsaken land years back and moved. He's living in Wales in the UK. How are things over there these days, Dennis?
Well, aside from a barking puppy in the background, I guess you're used to this with Hamilton and Laffy, right?
Yes, and I've got Jackson who tends to make noise every now and then as well.
Yeah, okay. Life is good. We've had lovely weather the last couple of weeks, and I understand you folks have had a lot of rain in that part of the world,
mm-hmm.
and it's not that easy. So, but we're doing good. We're doing good. We're managing to survive. Puppyhood is a bit of a challenge, and other than that, things are okay. We just had a lovely wedding last weekend.
Yeah, you know, I want to. So I don't get the whole royals thing. I really don't. I mean, these are people who are pardon my French, but sucking off the public teat. I mean, these are people that haven't done anything except, you know, be members of the Lucky Sperm Club. And they're just, are they loved? Or is there any faction in England that says enough of this whole royal nonsense already?
Well, I mean, we do have a bunch of what we would call Republicans, not in the same sense as you would think of them. But, you know, we do have this group of people that are against anything to do with the monarchy, and they feel that way. It's just, you know, for me, I kind of enjoy the pageantry.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoyed the fact that one could just ignore all of the craziness going on in the world, from, you know, breaking headlines right now that Mueller's team appears ready for ex-Trump aide George Papadopoulos to be sentenced, so mm-hmm. that may be done with him. And, you know, it just was nice to have a weekend filled with, for lack of a better word, some hope. Harry is my favorite royal because he's a bit of a black sheep in the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the one that nobody ever expected much of, and yet he's the one that's done everybody the most proud because of the, you know, the fact that he was in the military for 10 years. There's that famous Today Show scene where, you know, he's being interviewed and they've got to go on a helicopter mission, and you see him rip off his microphone and run at full speed with the rest of the troops to, you know, to do their duty. He's been doing so much charitable work. And Meghan Markle is sort of the future for us all. She's the person that everybody's kind of looking to help heal some of the racial divides in this country.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the fact that we had 125,000 people show up in this little teeny tiny town of Windsor, and, you know, you see that great stretch of road in front of the castle called the Long Walk, about 2.5 miles, a little bit more, filled with people 10, 12, 15 deep. it was an exciting day. And then you had the Reverend Michael Reverend Michael Curry, who gave the outstanding sermon. So for me, I really enjoyed Saturday.
Good.
It sort of took me away from all of the Trump craziness and everything for 24 hours. And, you know, we sort of showed the world how we do weddings and parties here.
Right.
Which we have to admit we do very well.
Yes, I suppose you do. Also, breaking TV ratings to put just to disprove something that the moron said.
So I want to thank you all. It's very early in the morning. I think you probably broke the all-time in history television rating for 3 o'clock in the morning, that I would say.
That I would say he was wrong. And I think the all-time ratings was Princess Diana's wedding. I even remember that. I did not wake up on purpose for this one. I have sleep issues, so I happened to be awake for some of it. So I did see some of it. But, yeah, I don't have the royal fever, but a lot of people over here do, and especially with an American girl marrying the prince, I guess. Everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people want a bit of a fairy tale in their lives.
Well, you know, it certainly beats the news of late. And as I said, for about 36 hours, we were able to sort of, I mean, when we went to do the rundown for the podcast that we taped on Sunday night, it quickly became, you know, business as usual.
Mm-hmm. So what is the big story over there these days? I know we're dealing, obviously, with the Mueller investigation, and Trump, I think, so freaked out by it all that he's getting more and more dangerous by the minute.
He is. And the fact that he cannot seem to stop basically helping to prove obstruction of justice charges, is incredible. I mean, we are following it a bit over here, but nowhere near to the lengths that it consumes your media. We're more concerned about what he does on the global stage, because that then has an impact here. For example, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, the withdrawal from the Iran deal sent all of Europe scurrying, but they came forth with a united front, and they're also talking to Putin about, you know, staying the course. So it's just the U.S. out alone on that cliff edge. And, you know, the biggest issue continues to be the fact that we are completely unprepared for Brexit. And Theresa May has lost the bill that she's trying to push through that says basically we're going to be able to go it alone and do our own thing whenever we want to do it. The House of Lords has said, no, you've got to let Parliament vote one more time once you have a full agreement. And she's not been able to get it past our upper chamber, the House of Lords. So what she did on Friday, in the midst of everybody preparing for the wedding, was she decided to appoint 10 new peers, which is what we call lords, to the House of Lords. They were all conservative that were going to back her agenda going forward.
So
just insane. She stacked the deck, basically, so that she'd have a better chance of winning.
Right. So without this, she's not going to be able to get Brexit going?
Well, you know, we're still looking at the fact that we could end up with a second Brexit referendum. That's an important thing.
And overturn it?
I'm sorry?
And overturn it?
Well, that's what we're hoping, because right now, I mean, we had a stat on the podcast a week ago that said that basically, you know, support for Remain has crossed the 60% threshold, which is huge, because it was a knife's edge vote originally 2 years ago, 51-49, 51.6 to, you know, 48 point whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was a very, very close vote with a very high turnout, 75%, I think, total. And, you know, no one has really been enthusiastically for it. It was mostly just like what you saw with a vote for Trump. A protest vote. We're going to send a message. Well, that message has cost us, you know, two huge EU agencies that were based here, and it's cost us a number of other things along the way in terms of lost jobs and the economy. And everybody's predicting that come March of next year, when this all takes hold, we're going to see, you know, a dramatic damage to the economy, because nobody wants to deal with one island when they can deal with a 27-nation block of 300 million people.
Sure. No, I see, you know, I think there's buyer's remorse over here as well, although what I don't understand is Trump's, you know, approval numbers are going up. I don't get it.
Well, it's the disinformation. I mean, you know, he has a very powerful outlet in Fox News that will do and say whatever mm-hmm. he wants them to do or say. And they basically, along with, you know, the talk radio and Breitbart and I don't know if you saw the circus the other night, the Showtime mm-hmm. show, but it was truly astonishing. They actually went in and interviewed the folks over at the Daily Caller and Breitbart News, and it was astonishing groupthink, and it's a totally different parallel universe, parallel reality, and it's very powerful. And it's really quite scary to see how something like that can be allowed under your FCC laws, under your FTC laws, under any type of law that you would allow, you know, such blatant attacks on your FBI, your intelligence community, and everything else.
It's horrific, actually, what's going on, the way the intelligence community is being shat upon and demeaned. And I fear for the future of the Republic, the way he is going about not only demeaning, just sort of almost dismantling this whole, you know, department of the government, taking away all credibility. It's frightening. It's really frightening. Is there any kind of fake news? And this is the other thing that gets me, because Trump is always calling fake news. There is fake news, just not the outlets that he's pointing out. It's not the New York Times and the Washington Post that are the subject of fake news. It's, as you said, Dennis Campbell, you know, it's the Daily Caller, it's Breitbart, it's Fox, it's Sinclair, which soon is going to be the most dangerous of them all. Do you have a mechanism like that in the media in the UK?
No, I mean, I think what most of the conservatives would say is that, you know, the BBC tends to be a bit biased and a bit more left-leaning, more mm-hmm. like MSNBC.
Or but, like MSNBC you know, used to be. MSNBC yeah. these days leans over to accommodate right-wingers.
Well, MSNBC is trying so hard to be balanced that it's actually hurting itself,
yeah.
with the exception of your evening lineup.
Right.
I mean, when you get to Chris Hayes and Maddow mm-hmm. and Lawrence and the evening programs,
right?
You're getting really good, solid news and reporting.
That is true.
That you would not get otherwise.
Yep.
So, the problem is that the negative market is much bigger and stronger and has a lot more people that don't just follow it, but they retweet it, and you know, they, what is it that they used to call that? Radio host, the big fat guy in OxyContin,
Rush Limbaugh. Yeah,
yeah, Rush Limbaugh. So it really is, you know, absolutely terrifying, because they have basically co-opted through their messaging and set up, you know, something so that no matter what anybody says on the other side, no matter what comes out of Mueller, this group isn't going to believe it. They don't care about facts. They don't care about information. Here, you have your press that is more left or right leaning. You have your press that would be pro or against Brexit. They're pretty powerful in the newspapers, but there's nothing like Fox on telly here. And we no longer have Fox in this country on Sky, which is the big cable operator. So they don't really get much of a foothold here with their point of view. Most everybody
wow.
is pretty much in unison and lockstep saying, you know, this whole thing with Donald Trump is just batshit crazy.
So you do get MSNBC over there, but you don't get Fox?
No, here's what I do.
Wow.
I don't get, I listen, I have the NBC News app on my iPad
uh-huh.
and on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm driving, I'm not listening to local news. I'm listening to, well, Morning Joe starts at about 11 o'clock in the morning, our time.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm out in the afternoon And I also, because they now have all of their shows on podcasts,
right?
I download from 8 to midnight, basically.
Wow.
You know, and during the course of the day before 11, I'll listen to Rachel, then Chris Hayes, then Lawrence, and then finally, you know, if I can stomach him, he gets to be a bit much at 11 o'clock
yes,
at night, Brian Williams.
Yeah, you know, that show is, it's weird because there's a lot of good information, but you got to, you know, you got to get through him and his flowery way of speaking, and everything is a big deal, and then there's the trust issue with him, and yeah.
Well, he still talks as though he's anchoring the nightly network news hour.
Yeah.
So you find yourself going, okay, Brian, get to the point. Because when he gets to the point, he's usually right on. He's usually pretty good about what he's saying. But you just have those moments where you're like, you know, it used to be with, you know, Teddy Kennedy, you know, when he would start going on a ramble, you know, people would yell, a verb, Senator. We need a verb.
Oh, boy. Dennis Campbell is with us from UK Progressive Magazine, and he's co-host of the Three Muckrakers podcast. So since the last time we spoke, a lot has happened. We get a year's worth of news in about a week these days. We had the moving of the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which caused
a lot. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, really. What was the reaction over there? I'm guessing the same as it was in the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, the movement of the embassy wasn't the big deal. It was the Israeli overreaction on the Gaza Strip, which, by the way, now that I've just said that, under this stupid law that they're trying to push through, you know, with the backing of AIPAC, you know, I've probably just committed a felon and, you know, could be liable for a $250,000 fine and could spend up to 10 years in prison because I'm talking about something that affects Israel.
Seriously.
I mean, have you seen that bill?
No.
It's insane.
Wait, this is a law in Israel?
Yeah. No, it's a law in the United States.
Oh, my God.
And it has the backing of Ben Cardin, a Democratic senator from Maryland,
right?
And Chuck Schumer.
Of course.
And basically, I can't see how this bill could ever become law. But it seriously made it past the first two rounds in the Senate. And it was fairly big news towards the end of last week. But, of course, anything that's real news gets buried in all of this, you know, Mueller, Trump, Giuliani, Avenatti bullshit. And, you know, this is a serious piece of legislation that has both Democratic and Republican backing because AIPAC is to the Democrats as the NRA is to the Republicans. I mean, they put a ton of money into various candidates and campaigns, and it's a huge piece of legislation that you know, we talked about on the podcast, episode 160. We're calling it The World Turned Upside Down. And did you read Dahlia Lithwick's piece?
I did not. No, I didn't.
She's the probably the nation's preeminent reporter on all things related to the Supreme Court and justice.
Yes, and she's at Slate, right?
Yeah, she's at Slate. And her article was an absolute masterpiece. I actually took a bit of it for the closing because she said, you could be forgiven if you began every morning last week with a shot of tequila with your breakfast because the news was so crazy all week last week. And she went on to talk about how disconcerting it is and how people are giving up hope and they're despairing. And she says, you know, and you want to turn off the television and you want to just make it stop. And you can't because that's exactly what Trump wants you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brilliant. And I was thrilled with the results of these primaries this past week on Tuesday. And today's only Wednesday.
Right,
isn't it? See, that's what happens in Trump world. You lose track of
things. Tell me about it.
And I just love the fact that, you know, it's if we really know how to fight back. I'm working on a piece right now in which I'm almost right. I'll probably post it tomorrow. But, it, you know, I'm talking about it has been much worse, just not in many lifetimes. You know, most of us that are older, you know, I've just turned 60. remember, I was in high school when Nixon went down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in one of the very first close-up groups to go to Washington, D.C. And, you know, we read newspapers and we had 22 minutes of news, you know, at night at 6:30 p.m.
Right.
And, you know, we got our news briefs hourly through CBS News Radio. And that was it. We didn't have phones and devices and news breaks and news alerts or cable or any of the things. And yet this was one of those situations where, as a news junkie, we were following the money and seeing where this story was going. And there were three things that caused Nixon to unravel: the Saturday Night Massacre in October of 73,
mm-hmm.
when Elliot Richardson, the attorney general, refused to fire Watergate special counsel Archibald Cox. Does this sound familiar?
Yep.
You know, and so Nixon fired Elliot Richardson, and then his deputy, William Ruckelshaus, who was a general, by the way. So the task fell to Robert Bork, who ended up firing Cox. And many felt later that that's what cost him his seat on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But 50,000 concerned citizens, you're going to love this, sent telegrams the next day,
wow,
calling for Nixon's impeachment.
Wow.
So 50,000 people walked over to Western Union, put money down, and sent a telegram. We didn't have email or computers or anything like that. You know, and then Leon Jaworski was forced to be appointed because they realized that people were very upset. And he is the one that picked up the gauntlet and took everything to the Supreme Court for the Oval Office tapes. Those needed to be released. And then they were released on the 22nd of July, in a unanimous Supreme Court decision, 8-0, Rehnquist recused himself. And the world then heard the tapes. And 3 weeks later, on the 9th of August, he was gone. The first and only president to resign. So I tell people to take heart, because when it happens and when it goes down and when Trump goes down, it will happen in what seems to be a heartbeat. The Watergate investigation was 26 months long. At the 13-month point, members of the Republican Party were doing exactly what they're doing today.
Really?
Which is saying, you've been doing this for too long. You're hurting the country. We need to stop this. We need to come to a decision. And then as it went further and further, Nixon got deeper into drink because he was a drunk, and he lost his shit and pulled the Saturday Night Massacre. And, you know, even though Trump doesn't drink, he is going to lose his shit.
He's on something. He may not be drinking, but he's on some kind of something. Don't know what. But I want to go back to this law that you talked about. So there was a law proposed here in the U.S. Is this the it's supposed to be like an anti-Semitism thing, and it's turning out to be can't be critical of Israel?
I'm looking for it, because the best when we get going like this, I find my scripts to be the best way to go through these things, and you know, when we look at the way this whole thing has come up and come together, you've got all right, I'm almost there. There we go. The Democrats have joined the Republicans in a bill. And this is a quote: criminalizing speech critical of Israel.
Wow.
Now, with Trump as president, it's easy to forget how utterly hopeless congressional Democrats are, including those who look like progressives. But the best indicator of Democrat corruption is its slavishness to AIPAC, which is the American Israeli Public Action Committee, Public Affairs Committee, mm-hmm. American Israel Public Affairs Committee. And the fact that there's growing support among Democrats in both the House for legislation sponsored by Ben Cardin, co-sponsored by Chuck Schumer, it would make it a felony for Americans to support the international boycott against Israel,
right,
commonly known as BDS.
Yes.
To which we then had a discussion. We said, what the fuck?
Right. It's
not
about
guilty
speaking
of violating this prohibition is going to face a minimum civil penalty of $250,000 and a maximum criminal penalty of $1 million and 20 years in prison. And the ACLU is already out there actively against it. They said the legislation would bar U.S. persons from supporting boycotts against Israel, including its settlements in the Palestinian-occupied territories conducted by international government organizations such as the United Nations and the EU. Now, how is it possible to criminalize simply supporting a boycott? I mean, where's the First Amendment here?
Yeah, good question.
You know, don't states and municipalities here boycott and protest discrimination based on race or sexual identity? So it was a truly stunning bit, and the fact the ACLU is a bit. But again, it can't get through the Stormy Daniels news vice.
Right, because that's hijacked everything. You know, each one of these stories, Stormy Daniels is a news story, but there's so much else going on. It's interesting to see what gets picked up as on the evening news.
Yeah. I mean, and I was watching the circus late last night because we get it a day later, and they were interviewing Don Lemon over at CNN.
Right.
And he literally pulled out a stack of fact check stuff that was at least 3 foot thick, and he said, "This is the stuff we have to do to be ready when we go into interviews." And literally everything changes at the last minute. And they film him with his jacket running down the hall with less than 3 minutes before going live on air, you know, sitting down and boom, off it goes. Because it's happening so quickly, they don't know what to do. They can't keep up.
Yeah, you know, it's gotten me to the point where I have real stress, anxiety about doing this show every day. Because there's no way I can possibly be up to speed on everything that's going on. There's just too much. And I do it all alone. So it's not like I'm collaborating with someone who can, you know, hand me, have half of the information in his or her head. And, you know, it's overwhelming. And it's depressing.
I mean, we literally moved the taping of the podcast to Sunday morning. And the last couple of times we've done it on Sunday evening. So that at least it's there first thing in the morning, and you know it's a definitive collection of everything that happened the week before, and was still struggling. So
no, I
and
do.
By the way, we've got a Patreon page, Patreon, I think you call it. You know, for us, it's under my name, Dennis Campbell. So if your listeners want to find a way, I know you're trying to get them to support you as well.
But always.
It's patreon.com/Dennis Campbell. So we just opened that this week, and we're just trying to grow it and get a couple of times a week. We can't ever get to where you are 4 times a week live, but we just feel there's such a need to let people know what's going on.
Yeah, because we're not being served by the corporate news media. And again, progressive outlets are falling away. Just because we get no support from, the money on the left. On the right, they support their independent media. It's how Breitbart has grown. It's how the Daily Caller has grown. It's how all of those, websites that I don't like to name, because I think they're illegitimate, they're purveyors of real fake news. It's how they survive. But on the left, we're sort of left to fend for ourselves, which is difficult
this
day and age.
It's hard.
So how can people find you, Dennis Campbell?
Let's see. I'm at UK Progressive on the Twitter bot. And we've got pages for the Three Muckrakers podcast, as well as UK Progressive on the Facebook / pages, I guess, or Facebook pages. And I've written a couple of books that would love to get some support for. One of them is Donald Trump, Deplorable Bully, 45 Horrible Weeks of POTUS 45. Going to have to write a second volume soon because so much more has happened.
Yes.
And the other is Breathing Hope and Fear, Egypt Since 2011, where I bring everybody up to date on what's happened since the 18 days that overthrew Mubarak. So. And I thank you, as always, for letting me on to chat about these things.
Well, it's always great to talk. And I love the perspective that you bring, so we can talk about what's going on in the world. And I just have to ask, is everyone over there as mortified as we are by Trump, wondering how we're going to get through this?
I think at the end of the day, most people sort of sit there and think, well, he is mortifying, but we've been through worse. And we will survive. I mean, it's a very much keep calm and carry on sort of mentality.
It's a British thing, I suppose. Here, we're all, freaking out. Dennis Campbell, again, find him on Twitter at UK Progressive. The magazine is ukprogressive.co.uk. And you can find the Three Muckrakers podcast on iTunes. I'll put up links on the blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show. Dennis, thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always fun being here.
Take care. Bye-bye. Dennis Campbell. There you go. And with that, we're done for the day. Thank you for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.